know it was just a dream. I know I didn't have an anal probe. And I know that I am not under alien control.
I love to sing about the moon and the June and the spring. I love to sing about a sky of blue or a keyboard to...
What the hell was that?
He is under alien control. That thing in his butt is linked up to the visitor.
From the CIC of the USS Hold. It's Tyler Hallwood and Christy Chaos. S-Con Radio X presents The Bad Side Live.
Are you kidding me? They actually said that Mark Holmberg wasn't fat? Hello? The guy admits he's at least 300 pounds in the court of law. No, he's got to be more like 400 pounds. Because he broke the freaking meat scale last time we tried to weigh him. Mark Holmberg not fat. Like my chin's not big. I mean, that's gotta be one of the greatest moments in the history of mankind. Cause you know what's happening. Seriously, think about this. How many pervy guys have been watching one of these Girls Gone Wild tapes, and then they realize, oh my god, that was my daughter that just French kissed a whore!
So the question is, why hasn't President Barack Obama sat down with Governor of Arizona and asked what he can do to help with the immigration problem in that state instead of red carpeting Mexican President Calderon at the White House? We are grateful that the press didn't bow before Calderon, but he may have well just gotten down on his knees, unzipped Calderon's fly, and sucked his dick.
I've never met anyone more friendly in my life.
Hey, Calderon, you
want to
get some
food? All right, Lynn, gentlemen, please take your seats. Ah, fantastic. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the program. My name, of course, is Mr. Tyler Hollywood to all you fans out there. Welcome to June 23rd, 2010. I think now something like 70 days into the BP oil spill, whatever it happens to be. Anybody have a countdown on that? Feel free to send me what the countdown is. I got callers already trying to call in. Give me 5 minutes. Give me something to let you chew on before you start calling in. Really, there's some people out there that just need to hang on to their shorts here. I'll gladly take phone calls when I'm ready to go. Right now, does it look like I'm ready to go? Seriously. Come on, get a grip here, people. How about this for news? Chris from Texas County sent this to me yesterday. He mentioned this last night. Before he was kicked off the air. Jesse Lunderby. Lunderby. L-U-N-D-E-R-B-Y. Jesse Lunderby. Models for Playboy. She basically could lose her job as an Arkansas jailer. Now, the ever-popular men's magazine Playboy has played host to tens of thousands of models. This includes famous movie stars and celebrities, as well as those who hope to use the magazine in order to kickstart a celebrity career. Unfortunately for one of their latest models, it may well have caused the end of a career rather than the beginning. You see, the 21-year-old Arkansas jailer Jesse Lunderby, who works at the prison in Washington County, has been suspended following her nude appearance on the company's extremely popular website. The suspension is intended to give the Sheriff's Department sufficient time to decide if she has or has not violated her policies. Now, in particular, they are concerned that revealing herself to Playboy's masses may have overstepped the line when it comes to the regulations regarding conduct unbecoming of an officer. There is another technical matter in that employees with the department are not permitted to undertake any external employment, like you can't moonlight. She's been an officer at the jail for over 3 years and has stated on TV that the Playboy shoot was not a surprise to her employers. She claims they were fully aware of her intentions and that she had obtained all the permissions required for her to take part in the shoot, in essence, taking her clothes off. It's funny here, folks. I can understand with just about anybody's opinion on this, because this opens up a lot of doors. And some of those opinions I may disagree with, but I will understand. Like, conduct unbecoming of an officer. I can understand that if you have certain policies in place, you should act accordingly, depending on where you work. If you have policies where you work that you can't do something like this and can't do something like that, and they were in place before you started working there, then you're making your own decision here about where your future's going to go. Now, I saw the interview with this lovely lady here, Jessie Lunderby, and she really, I think, doesn't care if she gets fired or not. I'm going to guess it's because if she gets fired, she has something else now to fall back on. She was in frickin' Playboy. And she's going to... Playboy has opened up a lot of doors for a lot of women. Whether they've become actors or actresses or whatever you want to call them, to reality TV stars, whatever it happens to be. All right? Some no-names end up becoming famous because of Playboy. Because they got naked. Now, Jessie Lunderby chose to be part of a working woman's expose. She worked in a jailer. Here's my question. There's a lot of people that are condemning this woman because she took her clothes off and got naked on an internet Playboy site. I don't even think she made the magazine, which she probably will now. Now, these people who complain and condemn her are the same people that end up buying the fireman's calendar or the girls from Hooters calendar or whatever it happens to be. There has been paramedic calendars. There has been police officer calendars, stuff like that. Nobody says boo about these calendars or anything like that. Nobody says boo about shit like that. And it never ceases to amaze me just how far our mentally ill government administrators will go to pretend that they are respectable members of society. And it's very sad that so many people buy into their lies and their masks. Hey, y'all, let's not fire abusive prison guards. Let's give them a chance. Hey, let's not spend time improving our prisons and dealing with the prison rape epidemic. Hey, let's not thoroughly investigate each and every prisoner who was brought into the system to see if maybe they are being abused by the system itself. No, 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 no. Let's go fire a pretty chick because she got nude and she took her clothes off. Yeah, because then we can stand up and puff out our chest and pretend like we're trying to keep sex out of our everyday life. Then when nobody's looking, we go and fire up the porn. Come on, just admit it, people. Of all the people they could fire, they want to fire this girl. And granted, they haven't done it. But, I mean, I could walk into that prison and randomly point to some prison guard, and I'd bet my life he's just another uneducated drone that doesn't have a clue how the government is taking advantage of him, the prisoners, and the citizens, and likely keeps a tally on how many inmates he roughs up each month. Why not fire that guy? Oh, because he's a good little drone. Thank you. Now, phone lines are open. They've been open after I berated the caller right at the top of the show. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, yes, very good. Finally, have time to overload. Can call the search party up. Do not have to attack the Facebook pilot.
Welcome, Sheik Farouk.
Oh, finally.
Sheik, I have missed you. How are you, sir?
Oh, my friend, I'm very good now. I said, we're looking for overlord. Look high and low, and even look in the middle. Could not find you. Big, very big salad dressing and ergonomics to you. How are you, sir?
I am doing a lot better, thank you. I have been, as you may be aware, I was out of service for a while. Some kind of conspiracy that kept me off air, but I am back, and I'm live.
Oh, yes, they have to get a blue pill for this.
No, I did not need a blue pill for anything like that.
Oh, that is good to know.
And what has been up in your world, Mr. Farouk? Sheikh Farouk.
Oh, my friend, she gets mad. I'm madder than this OJ at a better women's rally.
Oh, no. What's the deal? What's the problem?
Oh, I'm very glad you asked. We have not played this game in much time.
No, we have not.
Oh, my friend, I am, how you say, red up the ass about this B of the T. These goddamn motherfuckers fucked my whole 4th of July weekend up.
Oh, no. Well, what happened?
Oh, my friend, again, glad you asked. You are 2 for 2.
Should I play a bell?
4th of July. I'm sorry?
Never mind, go ahead.
I get a bill.
Yes, you get a bill. Go ahead, sir.
Every 4th of July, which is a great American holiday, she's an American citizen, you know, Mom Apatai and these Bengals.
Right, and fireworks.
Every year, go to Florida for a big camel wrestling tournament. She is undefeated and would go to defend title every year. Cannot go this year. This goddamn B of the P oil spill.
Oh, no.
Water, nowhere to tie camel.
That's right. This whole oil spill going on down there, BP, President Obama, Big Oil, all kinds of messes
out there.
Oh, that's
another goddamn fucking, he need to be plugged too.
Wow. So how do you think we should fix this this spill? I mean, do you have any ideas? I mean, you're a sheik.
Oh, yes, I'm very much a sheik.
any ideas on how to fix this thing? Here's my thought. Back in, I think it was like 30 years ago, Intox, I think that was the name of the Mexican oil company, had an oil spill just like this. And it took them a while to figure it out. How come we have not visited what that outcome was, what they finally did to fix their oil spill 30 years ago? How come we haven't done that yet? It worked then. How come not now?
Because I want to know solution. If I find solution too quickly, gas cannot go to $31 a gallon.
That's a good point. Here's another point. We'll be talking about this later in the show. Obama is trying to pass his cap and tax bill regarding oil and drilling and all that. And I got to wonder, do you think perhaps he's trying to get the ire of the general public up so that they will support him in his next attack on the United States? What do you think?
Oh, my friend, I know the ire of the American public was up when that dumbass got voted in. It cannot be more up.
It can't be more up now.
It's high as erection on this night of prom.
Jesus. All right, Sheik. So what else has been going on in your world?
Oh, not much. It's hot as hell because this is hell, Michigan, so all is good.
That's true.
Good in this neighborhood.
That's true. That's good. Been doing any traveling besides your failed attempt to go do something in Florida?
Oh, my friend, I'm very glad you asked. If Sheik idea, Sheik wants to visit with this Chris from Texas, Tanner, Arkansas, Buberty Justice. We will go to the Charlie Tunica of the Mississippi and make much gamble and find many bitches.
Nice. Hey,
oh,
you got
yes.
it like that.
Oh, yes, my friend. I've invited him. he can ride good camel.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, Sheik, I want to thank you for calling into the show. Please update us here on your travels and travails in the future.
Oh, my friend, have another idea. How to plug pipe.
How to what?
How to plug oil pipe. A big idea. Just come to
me. Oh, it just came to you. Sure, share. Please share.
We killed this girl in Vandersloot and stuffed his goddamn carcass in the hole.
Oh, you know, that's, I wish that could work. I don't think that would be enough. But wouldn't that be beautiful, huh?
According to this hard packer, this may be soon on the horizon.
Well, then maybe we should look into this. We certainly should look into this.
All right, very good.
All right, sir, thank you very much. You call in again soon.
Yeah. Many economics to all.
Thank you. And, of course, many constipations to you, sir. All right, there he goes, ladies and gentlemen, the Sheik. You know, speaking of Obama and BP, from a Wall Street Journal editorial, which I happen to stumble across, it was from June 7th, as for the idea that cap and tax is the best way to punish BP and Big Oil, it'd be more convincing if Kerry Lieberman hadn't been written in concert with ConocoPhillips, Royal Dutch Shell, and Bad Timing Department. Ironically, here's a quote, "Ironically, we've been working very closely with some of these oil companies in the last months," Mr. Kerry said in early May. That's, of course, Senator Kerry. The senator from Nantucket added that they've acted in good faith and they've worked hard with us to try to find a way to get us t- to a solution that meets all of our needs. Lobbyists for the three oil majors were regular visitors to Mr. Kerry's closed-door negotiations in this cap and tax meetings. So BP and Big Oil support the cap and tax. I think it's now clear. Oh, and there's one other thing I want to mention. Most recently, like 3 or 4 days ago, it was announced that Barack Obama decides to decline help from foreign countries whom we've helped in the past in offering their help with basically what I would consider a disaster in the Gulf Coast. He's declined their money. We have gone to places to help in tsunami relief efforts, earthquake relief efforts, starvation relief efforts. We have spent billions and billions of dollars in helping other people. And now, when we are faced with a disaster of epic proportions, going on nearly 70 days now, Mr. Obama decides to decline help from other people. And that makes clear that Obama and his company, the company he keeps, plan to completely and irrevocably destroy America's offshore drilling. And that was the intent from the inception of the current Gulf of Mexico disaster. Now, whether the disaster was accidental or by design, it is now being used by the Obama regime as a political weapon against the American people. You see, after the ostensible accidental BP oil rig explosion and subsequent continuing massive relief of millions of gallons of deep-sea oil into the Gulf, Obama issued a fiat that all U.S. offshore drilling was to be suspended for 6 months. Then, although U.S. District Court Judge Martin Feldman disagreed with the Obama regime's dictate and stated it was an invalid agency decision to suspend drilling of wells in depths of over 500 feet, simply cannot justify the immeasurable effect on the plaintiffs, the local economy, the Gulf region, and the critical present-day aspect of availability of domestic energy in this country, and that the Obama's agency's decision was arbitrary and capricious, and issued his ruling to lift the ban. The Obama regime immediately challenged a judge. Note, in recent memory, this is the first judge to rule in any way whatsoever against our current tyrant. Obama minion, Marxist and Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, said that he will issue another drilling moratorium and not follow the federal judge's orders. Obama seems determined that the jobs lost will not only remain lost, but will never return to the Gulf. Is he planning to remove all the people in the Gulf and effect yet another massive land grab? Clearly, the Obama regime is openly no longer following U.S. law here. They're defying U.S. law. They're defying a judge's orders. If Obama and company do not like a legal ruling, they simply ignore it, or Obama pronounces a new law that he likes better. This is what all dictators do, folks. It no longer matters that Obama and his Marxist Dems have shredded the U.S. Constitution and are committing daily overt criminal acts. If no one stops them, and the law is not enforced here, laws no longer matter. And that the Renos in office haven't said more than a peep, if that, about any of the Obama atrocities, they most certainly have not attempted to stop the dispo. By the way, don't be surprised when you hear that Obama is going judge shopping for a good Marxist to hear his case, in order that he, or she, assist him in developing a new front in Obama's war against the people of the Gulf and the rest of the USA. BP, Barack Obama, and Big Oil. Think about it. BP, Beyond Petroleum, and right into your wallet. the president will rail against BP while, as the biggest single recipient of BP campaign donation in the last 20 years, he pushes a tax that BP wants. Yeah. Hope. Change. Suckers. Everybody remembers this story. May 30th, 2005, beautiful blonde Natalie Holloway was spending her congratulations vacation in Aruba. She was seen socially with Dutch citizen Joren Vandersloot that evening, but was never seen alive again after. Her body has never been recovered, and after years of investigation, Vandersloot is still not under prosecution for the murder of this high school senior who was visiting Aruba on a school graduation trip. But the Holloway family, grieving for the past 5 years, may now be able to rest after the recent arrest of Vandersloot in Santiago, Chile, for a crime he allegedly committed on May 30th, 2010. The body of 21-year-old Stephanie Titania Flores Ramirez was found dead in her hotel room in Lima, Peru, on June 2nd, 2010. Peruvian police say Vandersloot, a young Dutchman, twice arrested for the 2005 disappearances of Alabama teen Natalie Holloway, was now a suspect in the slaying of Flores. Vandersloot was finally arrested and brought to Peru to await prosecution for the murder of Flores Ramirez. He was positively identified as the man seen at the hotel in Lima with Ms. Flores Ramirez on May 30th. May 30th seems to be a gruesome reminder and the anniversary date of executions plotted by alleged serial killer Joren Vandersloot. This could be the second crime of murder, or it may be his tenth. Nobody knows. Further investigations are underway to determine comparison information of similar crimes where Vandersloot may have been involved. On June 5th, 2010, the accused arrived in Lima for charges of murder, wearing a bulletproof vest, and may face up to 35 years in the San Juan de Lurigancho prison. This is a prison that is known for corruption, horrible conditions, and less than humane treatment of prisoners. Now, I know there's a lot of people out there that believe, deep down in their hearts, like I do, that Vandersloot is guilty of killing Natalie Holloway. He has just admitted it in video evidence which can't be used against him. And Vandersloot will most likely bed down in this hellhole for the next 40 years. And guess what? Deservedly so. Now, some people say, oh, why don't we just kill him? No. That is an easy way out for Vandersloot. People want to strangle him. They want to do an eye for an eye. This guy should not be killed for one reason. He should live every day of his life in the most horrible living conditions possible, so that his life in life is worse than Natalie Holloway's and Miss Flores Ramirez's in death. Let's take a look at Joran Vandersloot. Here's a quote. If I had to describe myself as an animal, it would be a snake. So said the 22-year-old Dutchman, Joran Vandersloot, on his YouTube personal page. As you all most likely know, Vandersloot was arrested last week, as you just heard, on the charge of murdering Stephanie Flores, a young Peruvian girl, by choking her to death. He has since confessed to the crime. Vandersloot is also the prime suspect in the murder of the American girl Natalie Holloway that we just mentioned in Aruba 5 years ago. Now, while that crime has not been proven against him, yet, his murder of Flores is beyond reasonable doubt. The evidences all seem to indicate that the young Joran is a predator, one who preys on young women, but who is not satisfied with merely destroying them emotionally. In short, snake or no, he certainly is an animal. How did Joran Vandersloot turn into the sort of person that we now see him as he is? What happened? Where did he go wrong? A strong case can be made, I believe, that his crimes are the direct result of the influence of his lifestyle and worldview upon an already unstable psychological profile. Vandersloot certainly left us a number of clues to his underlying view of the world and how it affected the way he viewed himself and others. From his Facebook account, we learn that he likes the rapper Notorious B.I.G. and pop singer Katy Perry, the TV show South Park. He has 160 kills in the game Mob Wars and likes pissing in random places when totally drunk or wasted. He also likes Texas Hold'em poker, Heineken beer, and Barack Obama. All clues that this guy is completely insane. I'm kidding. But definitely dangerous. Elsewhere, it has been reported of him on internet dating pages. The Dutchman has described as attractive, agnostic, a regular smoker and drinker who likes to make trouble anywhere, quote-unquote, I am totally wasted. Seems he likes to live life not quite in reality. People who know him well also wrote of their impressions. A friend described him as arrogant, saying he couldn't believe some of the things he did without inhibition. Joran Vandersloot is the epitome of the modern amoral man, the one who doesn't let little things like morals or inhibitions get in his way of a good time. What do we know about him just from these snippets that he has told us of himself? We know that he has no care for the things of religion. He acts without inhibition. He enjoys the thought of killing people, what with his 130 kills in the mob game, Mob Wars, and the two young ladies that we know of. He's completely controlled by his impulses and desires. He feeds all of this by partaking of some of the vilest music and popular culture that he has been polluted with. He despises the things, and likely the people, who would demand personal responsibility, self-government, or even adult behavior from him. He is the sort of person who readily yields to, and in fact actively pursues, whatever experiences will be personally gratifying to him and nobody else, regardless of the consequences for himself or for other people. His murder of Stephanie Flores, and likely his murder of Natalie Holloway as well, are the end result of this sort of lifestyle. These sorts of influences upon those who are psychologically weaker and more susceptible to putting the raging fantasies in their heads into action. But we have to admit, as individuality responsible for his own horrid acts, as Joran van der Sloot is, it isn't as if modern Western civilization, especially the European civilization of which he is part, does much any more to hinder his sort of thing. Europe is a godless continent, unless you count the parts currently under the theocratic sway of the ever-increasing European Muslim population. Godless civilizations produce godless people who act in godless ways. No matter how hard the atheists and free thinkers try to trumpet the crimes of religion, it cannot be credibly denied that one solitary century of complete control by the godless is just a relatively few countries has racked up a larger body count and a more extensive imposition of human misery than all of the history of crusades, inquisitions, and witch trials. Europe reached this point because it rejected the moral basis of sound, stable, successful civilization, which is the acknowledgement of God as both creator and judge. He made us. He gave us a choice to abide with his laws or not, and we will be accountable to him one of these days. A civilization that truly internalizes this dicta will produce a society where self-government is the rule, you know, rather than the exception. People in such civilizations will, basically control their own behaviors, and if they do not, then they will be restrained from those behaviors which harm the lives and liberties of their fellows. In a godless society such as Europe's, both of these restraints are increasingly being thrown off. More and more Europeans refuse to consider morality as any sort of inhibitive factor. More and more European governments are throwing off their God-given mandate to maintain order to prevent their citizens from destroying each other and each other's lives. Now, while I'm coming down pretty hard here on Europe, the same thing can, increasingly be said about America. Now, I believe in our country. I love our country. But our nation is headed down the same path. Indeed, it was to the foul cup of American entertainment that Joran van der Sloot put his lips, so as to feed himself in his rebellion. Our freedom. Our people are increasingly refusing to self-govern. And our judges and legislatures are refusing to put into place and enforce just laws which protect each of us from the others. Even while they are actively putting into place all kinds of laws that are stealing our liberty instead. How can we explain Obama's recent choice of Justice Robert Chetangmi for the Federal Appeals Court? This guy is the most notorious for his 2005 staying of the execution of a serial rapist and murderer in Connecticut, during which he openly advocated for the convict, to the point that 7 state prosecutors filed complaints against him for his complete lack of neutrality and decorum in his actions as a judge. He has also, on numerous occasions, disregarded mandated sentencing guidelines so that he could give lighter sentences to sex offenders and child pornographers. Chetangmi is a proponent of the profound legal theory that sexual sadists are less culpable for their crimes because of their sexual sadism. In other words, because they have a propensity to these crimes and do not act to control themselves, it's not really their fault when they commit them. This is the very antithesis of self-government and ordered liberty. Yet it is being played out on a smaller and less notorious scale in the lives of millions in America today. Nothing is ever anyone's own fault anymore. How dare you tell me what is right and wrong? when morals are tossed out the windows by these who want to pretend to be rugged individuals, but who are really children in grown-up bodies, it isn't in any surprise when the fibers of society start to strain and then break. Is it any surprise that that happens? Folks, America is at that point. Most Americans reject, often without realizing it, the biblical worldview and the self-government that necessity comes with. Morals, self-control, social conservatism, all that jazz is old-fashioned. Stands in the way of progress. It interferes with human happiness, as it is realized in doing whatever you want, wherever you want, and should I silently add, to whomever you want. This will invariably, as can be seen by those with the willingness to see it, lead to the violence and sociopathy we see in so many other fellow citizens today. Sure, not everybody who rejects morality and lives the radically secular lifestyle of amoralism is going to snap and start serial killing. I'm not saying that, but some do. And some will. Many more simply take the lives of everyone else around them that much more unpleasant through their thoughtlessness and social autism. What will be the consequences of American society if we, as a people, continue to reject biblical morality and self-government, especially self-government? I hate to break it to some folks, but it will not be the sleek, shiny, happy Star Trek society where all our needs are met and everyone lives in harmony with everyone else in a secular Eden. Instead, we have more and more snakes like Jurgen Vandersloot of our own. Understand my view, my sentiments on immigration. I'm checking email here, folks. Tyler at TalkRadioX.com if you want to drop me one. Alright? And here's the deal about immigration when it comes to me. Now, I've got this person over here saying, why, how can you speak of defending the Constitution when the one thing that helped build the Constitution and helped build America is immigration. You can look back at your own family and see that you came from immigration. Yeah, I can. My family came over on the Mayflower. I've gone back that far. As a matter of fact, one of my long-distance relatives died on the way over on the Mayflower. So I understand what immigration is all about. You want to know what my sentiments really are on immigration. Period. And we're not talking about illegal immigration here. I'm talking about immigration. I will rail against illegal immigration until I die, until I take my last breath. But my sentiments on immigration are expressed, really, if you look at it, by the welcoming words of poet Emma Lazarus that grace the base of the Statue of Liberty. I want you to look this up, Joey. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Now, those sentiments are probably shared by most Americans and, for sure, by my supporters out there, the listeners. But their vision of immigration has some blind spots. This has become painfully obvious in the wake of Arizona's law that cracks down on illegal immigration. Two separate things. But let's look at the immigration issue step by step. There are close to 7 billion people on our planet. All right? And I want you to take a realistic look at this, Joey. I'd like to know how the libertarians and the Democrats answer this question. Actually, I'd like to know how anyone answers this question. Does each individual on the planet have a natural or God-given right to live in the United States of America? Because we all know it's not physically possible. Unless one wishes to obfuscate, I believe that a yes or no can be given to that question, just as a yes or no answer can be given to the question whether Tyler Hollywood has a right to live in the United States of America. I believe most people, even my open border libertarian friends, would not say that everyone on the planet had a right to live in the United States. That being the case, suggest there will be conditions that a person must meet to live in the United States. Then the question emerges, who gets to set those conditions? Should it be a United Nations? Should it be the European Union, the Japanese Diet, or the Moscow City Duma? I can't be absolutely sure, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I believe that most Americans would recoil at the suggestion that somebody other than Americans should be allowed to set condition for people to live in the United States of America. What those conditions should be is one thing, and whether a person has a right to ignore them is another. People become illegal immigrants in one of three ways, Joey. Entering without authorization or inspection. Staying beyond the authorized period after legal entry, or by violating the terms of legal entry. Most of those who risk prosecution under Arizona's new law fit the first category, entering without authorization or inspection. Probably the overwhelming majority of Mexican illegal immigrants are hardworking, honest, and otherwise law-abiding members of the communities in which they reside. It would surely be a heart-wrenching scenario for such a person to be stopped for a driving infraction, have his illegal immigrant status discovered, and face deporting proceedings. Oh, boo-hoo. Regardless of the hardship suffered, being in the U.S. without authorization, ladies and gentlemen, is a crime, and hence, illegal. When crimes are committed, what should be done? Some people recommend amnesia, which turns out to be the root word for amnesty. But surely they don't propose it as a general response to crime where criminals confess their crime, pay some kind of fine, and apply to have their crimes overlooked. Amnesty supporters probably wish amnesty to apply to only illegal immigrants. That being the case, one wonders whether they wish it to apply to illegals past, present, and future, regardless of race, ethnicity, or country of origin. Various estimates put the illegal immigrant population in the U.S. between 10 and 20 million. One argument says we can't round up and deport all those people. I've already pointed out how long it would take. Wouldn't take that long. A lot shorter than it has been building up the illegal flow. And that argument differs little from one that says, since we can't catch every burglar, we should grant burglars amnesty. Catching and imprisoning some burglars sends a message to would-be burglars, and there might be a price to pay. That's why we have crimes and punishments. Similarly, imprisoning some illegal immigrants and then deporting them after their sentences were served, I think would send a signal to others who are here illegally, or who are contemplating illegal entry, that there is a price to pay. Not amnesty, a price to pay. Joey, here's the Overlord's suggestion in a nutshell. Start strict enforcement of immigration law. It's already on the books. Arizona has begun that. As a matter of fact, there's a town in Nebraska that's ready to do that too. Strictly enforce border security. Most importantly, modernize our immigration laws so that people can more easily migrate to our country while understanding that there is a price to pay for their inclusion. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is understanding the laws, learning a little English, and overall assimilation. Rock, what you got, baby?
This one's for the beaten down, the ones who lost their rock and roll. Rise up, you lost ones, claim your crown. You were born to rock inside your soul. Welcome, misfits, orphans, all the ones who feel they don't belong. You were made to rock, so stand up tall. Go rock the world and prove them wrong. Rock what you got.
Before we get the bear out here and wrap up this show, we have a letter that we didn't get to last night, so let's get to that right now. Here is a letter to Hollywood. Hey Ty, I've recently started dating a sexually adventurous man. He is the first person to successfully fist me. Whew, play a bell for that. Thank you for the vision, my dear. And it's fantastic. When I orgasm, I squirt. Lots. Afterward, the sheets are soaked and I'm in a puddle. We've put down towels, but the sheer volume of liquid soaks through them. Wow. Without towels, it soaks all the way through to the mattress. I'm not super pleased about ruining my mattress, and the post-coital sleeping on very wet sheets is not ideal. I don't really want to sleep on a plastic-wrapped mattress and change my sheets every time I have sex. Does anything exist that's super absorbent that I could put down during sex, or even something that might go under the sheets, so that at least it protects the mattress? Signed, Wendy in Maine. Well, Wendy, I really wanted to answer cat litter here, but not all cat litters are that absorbent. And really, who wants to sleep on cat litter? That's got to be worse than sleeping on the wet spot. Look, honey, listen, the bed is a nice place to sleep. It's a good place to read, and, yeah, an obvious place to fuck. But you can have sex everywhere, Wendy, and you can acquire just for screwing furniture or furnishings without going to hell with the vaginal before marriage crowd. Go to the sporting goods store and pick up a large folding wrestling mat. They're not that expensive. Store it under the bed, darling. And when your sexy time involves fisting, and hopefully you're not fisting each and every night that you have sex, by the way, get out of the bed! Pull the mat out, throw some towels down, and fist and squirt to your heart's content. Then when it's all over the towels, and the mat and the floor, you're able to crawl back into your warm, dry, comfortable bed. Really, people, is it that hard to figure out? Jesus, H. Christ. Let's get the bear out here, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Mo. Get up there in that chair. A little squirt, you.
All right, let's settle down now. We don't need any of this fanfare that you mindless sheep seem to be so easily talked into doing here.
Wow, you really love your fans, don't you?
By the way, I just want to say thank you.
Okay.
To all these people that, in the crosswalk, like to put up their hand like they're a police officer. Thank you for reminding me not to run you over while you cross the street. I mean, I was seconds away from slamming my foot down on the gas pedal and running your cranky ass over when, out of nowhere, bam, you put your hand in my face, commanding me to think twice about the murder I was about to commit. I especially appreciated that. You also gave me the stink eye the entire time you walked from curb to curb, as if to say, I know you wanted to run me over, but I forbid it. Forbid it! You know what? You people suck. You're the worst. All right, Tyler, how you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic, thanks for asking. Better than you.
Well, you know, sometimes you're just going to have tough days.
Yes, that's true.
Christy, how about you? How are you this evening?
Christy's not here tonight there, Bear.
Nice! All right, so, what's that?
I'm sorry, Brad from Kentucky.
Brad from Kentucky?
Yes, Brad from Kentucky.
He's been running his mouth again?
Yes.
Well, just have him bring it on. Tell him, no, you know what? Brad from Kentucky, I know you're listening. Here's the thing, Brad from Kentucky. You like to run your mouth out there on Learman's show. You like to give Learman's show, you know, all the credit in the world. What you don't realize is that Mr. Hollywood still is the king of Saturday night. All right? But see, this isn't an issue between Hollywood and Learman. This is an issue, apparently, between the Angry Bear and Brad, who has stock in KY Jelly. All right? So if you want to bring something on, Mr. KY, then I will meet you Saturday night. I'm not afraid to show up Saturday night.
Jesus.
Bring it on, Brad from Kentucky.
Are you better now?
All right, now, where were we?
Top 10.
Ah, tonight's top 10.
Yes.
So I think it's since I was driving around in my new Lamborghini today.
New Lamborghini?
And I almost, you know, apparently ran over these pedestrians who had to put up their hands like they're, you know, Mr. Joe Cop. I decided that tonight's top 10 would be what's some top 10 funniest things about cars. And here we go.
All right.
Number 10. Guys treat them better than their girlfriends. That's for sure. Number 9. Thanks to Gone in 60 Seconds, stealing one is one of the coolest things to do.
Love that movie.
Number 8. If our parents ever get us a car, it's always the crappy one they used to own.
Hand-me-downs.
Number 7. Everyone won't admit that they drive fast, even though their average speed is probably above 100 miles an hour.
I plead the fifth there.
I know I'm guilty of that. Number 6. GPS devices make us feel like super spies tracking our targets.
It does.
You know that's true.
Yeah.
Both of you have done that.
I can't help it.
Number 5. When people hear a police car siren, they don't think. They just run.
Hey, are you saying something about, you know...
No, I'm not going there.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm not going there. Number 4. Car hoods are only meant for ornaments and scantily clad women from the 80s.
Oh, I love that video.
God, I still love that video.
Oh, so great.
Number 3. Despite their size, when looking at them from far away, people will still get hit by them all the time.
As evidenced by this afternoon.
People are just stupid. Number 2. We've all tried to cram into a taxi with friends after last call just so we don't have to pay for one by ourselves.
That is so true.
You know it's true. And finally, the number 1 funny thing about cars. You feel mature, cool, and lost when you drive a vehicle for the first time.
That is certainly true, sir.
And that's,
thank you, Bear.
My friends, is my top 10. Tyler, I'll see you tomorrow night. Brad from Kentucky, I'll see you Saturday.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to be our time here on the show. Coming up next, the two Seans, Girl Sean and Guy Sean. It's Irreverent Radio. And who else is going to join them? Tune in and find out. That's next, right here on Talk Radio X. Tomorrow, same Tyler time, same Tyler channel.